Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Each year, billions of dollars are donated to American charities through workplace giving campaigns. More than one-third of all Americans are asked to give to charity in the workplace each year. Today on All Sides, we'll talk about consolidated charitable giving in Central Ohio. How are consolidated charities working to be more responsive to donors and the needs of the community? And if you aren't sure what that all means, we're going to talk first with the president and CEO of United Way. Later on, we'll talk with the head of Community Shares of Mid-Ohio and the manager for Ohio State University's Bucks for Charity workplace giving campaign. Joining us now, Janet Jackson, the president and CEO of the United Way of Central Ohio. Janet served as city attorney at the City of Columbus. She's a former judge at the Franklin County Municipal Court and a former administrative and presiding judge at Franklin County Municipal Court. She currently serves as vice chair of the Central Ohio Workforce Investment Board, and she's got a slew of other contacts in the community. And I'd rather just get to our conversation, Janet, if that's okay.
Let's do that.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Just about a decade ago, maybe a little more, United Way, the larger United Way, started to change how it modeled, how it targeted its resources. Could you tell us just generally and catch us up on that and how that larger perspective changed?
Actually, Anne, it started in this community and maybe some other communities
before
nationally, because I'll remind your audience that my predecessor was Brian Gallagher, who was the CEO here and has been the president at what is now United Way Worldwide since 2002. I actually was on the board of this United Way when those conversations started to occur. So for decades, United Way primarily raised dollars, primarily through the workforce, through workplace campaigns. And then those dollars were distributed to a number of agencies, and we always refer to them as member agencies. And quite frankly, the agencies pretty much decided which programs those dollars would go to. And back probably in the 90s, as I recall, early 90s, the board of this United Way, and certainly with Brian, said, should we be doing more? Should we take the opportunity to look at what are the most critical needs and issues in our community and start focusing more of our resources against those particular issues? So we started to focus our work. And back then, we did it in seven areas. And then in about 07, 08, this board went through a strategic planning process. And there was some realism. You know, we were raising money maybe 2 to 3% more each year over the year before, but still not enough dollars to really move the needles in the many, many, many programs that we were funding. So the board said we needed more focus. And it wasn't just the board. We engaged over 300 volunteers. I personally talked to probably the top 40 CEOs in town before we decided to do this. But again, more focus. And so board decided education, income, health, and home, again, based on the critical needs in our community, not looking at Detroit or Washington or something else, but what was really happening right here in Franklin County. And so in 2010 or in 2009, we actually announced 10-year very bold goals. You know, we hope to achieve them by, 2020, again, focusing on the most critical issues in our community.
My guest is Janet Jackson, president and CEO of United Way of Central Ohio. If you have a question or comment for her, she'll be with us until 20 till. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. And if you're just joining us, you're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. So you started another effort last year to focus on education. And you decided to do that by starting with many, many conversations in the community. Tell us about that.
Okay. Well, let me back up just a little bit. We had already established two goals in education. One is around kindergarten readiness in terms of literally moving the numbers of how many children are prepared to come to kindergarten. Because I'd remind folks, our kindergarten students have to take tests when they come in. So there was a very specific number. And then around high school graduation. Still in our community, approximately each year, 1 out of 10 students will not graduate, you know, with their classes. So we had set the goals. But then we decided we needed even more input. We'd had a lot of input from subject matter experts, But we really wanted to get out in the community and to hear what ordinary folks were saying about education. And so we went through a process at United Way of turning outward. Leave the building at 360 South 3rd Street.
And that was a really new thing.
It really was, to go out into the community, grassroots folks, inner city, suburban communities. And what I think was even more important than leaving the building, we were listening and not talking to people. So small groups, 15 to 20 individuals usually, with facilitated questions, but then we really just sort of stepped back and, you know, took down the answers. So we've had over 50 conversations, and again, very, very different, close to 500 folks, you know, responding. It was very clear in all of the conversations, whether you were talking to more affluent individuals or folks who are struggling every day to make, you know, ends meet. This is a critical topic for individuals. They are concerned about education of our children. They've said we're at a tipping point, really, in our community, and not just our community, really, you know, across the nation. And one of the things that I was simply thrilled to see is that when people responded about the concern for our children, it was all children. So not just my own children or the children in my child's school or neighborhood. This is across the board. They also understand that the community has to step up and to play a role, that it can't just be our educators, our teachers, our principals, our superintendents, because so many of the factors as to why our children don't succeed are community. They're those outside, you know, factors. And so they're saying to us, what can we do as an individual? What can I do as an individual to help an individual child or to help this whole situation? So we're still ongoing with the conversations. We'll soon start conversations in another area, the area of health. But people are sharing, responding, and volunteering.
All of this, before we move on, you know, on the front page of the Dispatch today, they talk about poverty's grip grows. They say the number of Columbus area neighborhoods gripped by poverty continues to rise. Something like one in five area residents is gripped by poverty now, and that's much different than even 2008.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and to be perfectly blunt about it, in terms of our work,
yeah,
even though you may not see the word poverty driving our decisions, it certainly did. So even when you're talking about high school dropouts, so if you're a high school dropout, where are you going to work? I mean, my perspective is most of you are going to live in poverty. So how do you get at the root cause of that? You start with early childhood education. You know, you try to be with our kids as early as you can, to stay with them so they will graduate from high school, go on to college, or be prepared to go into a profession where they can make enough money to take care of themselves, you know, and their families. It also drives our work in terms of workforce, you know, development. We actually fund programs where we are certainly hoping that individuals will be able to find jobs that pay, again, a wage to take care of themselves and their family. 3 years ago, we started a women's group, the Women's Leadership Council. And the women on the council come from all walks of life, you know, lawyers, doctors, you name it, they're all there, all ages, all different races and ethnic groups. And they decided, this wonderful group of women, that as donors or investors at United Way, they wanted to work with women who have a GED or a high school diploma. They work every day, but they simply don't make enough money. They live in poverty to meet basic needs. And so one woman at a time, they are helping these women go back to school and to move them into careers where they can make enough money. So the poverty rate is absolutely there. It's more challenging than it was when we announced our bold goals. We simply can't let those numbers overwhelm us. I think it actually gives more credence to our focusing on programs that will change that, investing in programs and initiatives that will move people out of poverty.
You said that participants are concerned about all children in the community, not just their own. So how does that translate into action at the United Way level?
Well, for many, many, many years, we have invested in programs with our children. After-school programs. So 10 years ago, if a child was in an after-school program, I would say that the primary purpose of that was to keep the child safe while parents were still at work from, you know, the hours of 3 to 6. Give them a snack and let them play, a lot of recreation. Now those programs are much more focused. There's mentoring and tutoring. So when it comes to the individuals who want to volunteer, who want to help, you know, they can be involved. But it really is, I don't say more meaningful, it's much more strategic in the life of that child. I think this might be a good opportunity to talk about some work that we started about 3 years ago. And again, someone else came to us in this particular case, the Columbus City School Education Foundation. There was a separate foundation set up at the Columbus Foundation, chaired by one of our corporate leaders, you know, Tanny Crane, a number of other corporate leaders, but it also had as a member the former dean of the OSU College of Education and Human Ecology, David Andrews. And Dr. Andrews is one who believes in early intervention. So they came to us with a, let's call it a problem, that they wanted to figure out if we could come up with a solution. I think everyone now knows you have to start with our children earlier than either kindergarten or Head Start, which is typically 4. And so they said, What could you do to find every 2.5 to 4-year-old who lives in the Columbus City School District? We want them all identified. That's over 12,000 children. And after you find them, you'd actually assess them to see if they were on track for kindergarten readiness. And if you find that they're not, then it becomes your responsibility to work with the parent and to send that child to the correct intervention type, you know, program. Track them every 6 months until they get to kindergarten. This is such a significant initiative. We are unaware of any other community doing this, but I want you to think about the power if we can make this work.
Is it happening now?
Yes. We launched it in February of 2010.
Okay.
Columbus City is divided into 6 zones, and so we said you just can't go and find 12,000 children. You have to have a systematic way of approaching it. So we took the zone that comes right through downtown Columbus, you know, going north and south. We also added Wineland Park. Our guesstimate was that we would there were about 1,200 children who lived in that zone. Our goal was to reach 80% of them. We reached over 1,300. Now, the good news is that about 55% of those children were on track for kindergarten readiness, but the other 45 were not. So what did that mean? Sometimes it was a referral for a physical issue, such as speech and hearing. That's sort of a typical one. Many of them were social, you know, emotional. We actually had a few children, because of the testing, we thought had mental health issues. A surprising one for our educational experts is that many of the children had underdeveloped small motor skills. But we also found that out of the children that we touched, that we assessed, 39% of them came from homes where cash income was less than $5,000 a year. So when you walk into one of those homes, you're typically not going to see developmental, you know, appropriate toys, even those little scissors, again, developing the you know, the skill set, crayons, coloring books, you know, none of that. That's what we found. Again, we had the intervention, and I can share with you that from that very first zone, because we've now gone into London and now going to the South Side, we've gone back to the first zone. We have retested or reassessed, and it's a small sample. I think it was about 59 of our kids, but 30% of them showed an improvement in their development. So it appears to be working. You know, it's very early. Again, we're building this out by zone. All based on research. We're actually working with Ohio University and the Voinovich Institute. But everything that we're learning, we're tracking. And we want to learn. One of the things we've learned is that, and it shouldn't be surprising, poor people really move very, very frequently. So we're
I wanted to talk about transients. We're going to take a break right now. We're going to continue the conversation with Janet Jackson, President and CEO of United Way of Central Ohio. If you have a question or comment for her, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, Mitt Romney and the GOP. Will conservative Republicans back this man? Do they have to? That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
And On Point begins this afternoon at 1 o'clock on 89.7 NPR News. Thanks for joining us for All Sides with Ann Fisher today. 51 degrees in downtown Columbus, partly sunny skies and a high near 60 degrees. There is a chance of rain tonight and a low of 43. More sunshine for Friday and a high of 54.
Support for 89.7 comes from the state auto insurance companies providing home, automobile, and business insurance products and services to Central Ohioans since 1921. State Auto is on the web at stateauto.com.
All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back. My guest is Janet Jackson, President and CEO of the United Way of Central Ohio. Today on All Sides, we're talking about consolidated charitable giving in Central Ohio. Coming up, we're going to talk with the head of Community Shares of Mid-Ohio and the manager for OSU's Bucks for Charity Workplace Giving Campaign. Joining us now, Janet Jackson. The United Way of Central Ohio earlier this year took steps to broaden its donor base, saying it would accept contributions to charities that work on causes other than human services. We're going to talk a little bit about that, but right now we're going to continue our conversation about education and the United Way's efforts in that regard. Transience is a big problem. It probably is going to be interesting to see from zone to zone who moves where, because it's not necessarily that they're moving out of the city.
No. Sometimes they do.
Sure.
And maybe not out of the city because
– out of the school district? Or?
Right. They're still in the city of Columbus. So, for example, I believe the Southwestern School District, 40% of their kids actually live in the city of Columbus. That's that whole win-win piece. Dr. Harris, superintendent of Columbus City Schools, mentions that there's frequent movement from Columbus, you know, to Southwestern, you know, to another district. But absolutely, the mobility of children is a huge problem. You know, one of the things that we're seeing as a result of this economy are the number of homeless families. Our YWCA Family Center was built to house 50 families. It's running 115 to 120 families a night. And these are families who have never used the system before. But again, one of the things that we started doing several years ago in an effort to stop that, we had a family who came to us, Barb and Al Seamer. They had started an initiative down in Florida in Sarasota, and the work really had two objectives, to keep families in their homes and therefore to keep their children from moving during the school year, because every time a child moves, especially poor kids, they lose ground. So we started the Seamer work about, you know, 4 years ago. It's good old-fashioned case management with some dollars behind it, very small caseload. We've helped over 525 families in our community with over 1,000 children. Now, the great news for us is that the Seamers believe that we were the right United Way to now take over kind of an umbrella approach of this program in 10 different cities, 6 in Florida, 4 in Ohio. They want us to move into 5 other communities outside of those 2 states this year, and eventually they want to be in 50 different cities. So here's a family, huge, you know, donors, philanthropic, who turned to United Way to really take over, you know, the work for them.
Let me talk to you about something. In the last segment, you were using the word we, and you did again with the Seamers initiative. Who's we? United Way isn't the agency that's actually performing these tasks, is it?
Sometimes it is.
Okay.
It used to be that all of our dollars used to go specifically out to agencies, but we have large initiatives that we both manage and where we have staff. So with Columbus Kids, the lead staff for that work actually do work for United Way, but we collaborate with many, 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 many of our partners. With the Seamer work, the actual local work is being done by our agencies, communities, and schools, you know, through the shelter board. But the we of growing this across these states, we hired a project director, and he is housed at United Way. That is one of the changes in United Way. I'd say over the last 5 to 10 years, we have Start Smart, which is another early childhood initiative. And then there's this whole new concept that we're talking about. An article came out of Stanford earlier this year talking about the difference between individual impact and collective impact. I would describe the work that's done by our individual agencies with individuals who come to them as more individual impact. Collective impact is when you bring a multitude of folks from across the community to come to the table to try to solve a problem. An excellent example of that in our community is the Shelter Board. Another example is the new initiative Learn for Life that was just announced, and we are a part of that. And the thought is that really, to get at the root causes, to move the needle, to solve the problem, it has to have more of this collective attention to the issue and less of the individual at the individual agency. I mean, I think we need both. So I'm not saying, you know, that it's our work is going to go away in terms of funding excellent programs at our agencies. But I do believe you're going to see more of these large initiatives like Learn for Life, like Columbus Kids Ready, Set, Learn, and where we play a critical role in terms of getting the work done.
Some people not only don't necessarily understand that approach after so many years of United mm-hmm. Way being one way. There's been criticism. There's been some broken hearts along the way because mm-hmm. some great agencies have been left out of the equation. And also, I was wondering, does it feel like you're micromanaging too much?
No. Okay. And I'll tell you why. It's about accountability. My customer is actually the investor, the donor. That's my number one customer. And what the customers have been telling us over the last few years, you need to show me the return on my investment. And so when it comes to the programs, there's great accountability. There are metrics. We will work with our agencies to make sure that they have all that they need to actually get the work done. But quite frankly, a part of my job is that if the numbers are showing that a particular program isn't working, then we will stop investing in that program. I mean, that to me is driven by the donor. They want to know that we are getting the results that we say we're going to get.
Do you ever find yourselves, given the broad nature of what you're doing, particularly when it comes to education, at cross purposes with government?
Actually, we're trying to work more closely, okay. you know, with government. When I say collaborate, when you look at who's around the table in terms of our volunteers, it will frequently include government. I've recently had conversations, for example, with members of city council and the mayor and the county commissioners about Columbus Kids Ready, Set, Learn. This is a big initiative. It costs a lot of money. So what's the role of government? And I've been very well received. We have worked and will continue to work on policy matters, you know, at the state level and even on the national level. So the key word here is collaboration. When I say we, I mean there are lots of folks in that we. I'm seeing corporations much more involved in early childhood education than early before. The Ohio Business Roundtable. Issues around early childhood education is a priority for them. They've shared that with the governor.
So it's not just about giving money to United Way. It's about sharing the ideology of United Way and sharing its focuses.
Yes, I would say so. And with United Way, we try to live up to the brand, Live United. Give, advocate, and volunteer. So it's just not about the dollars. It's advocacy work. It's public policy work. It's connecting individuals who want to be able to give of their time and themselves around primarily the work. And again, our work is in education, income, health, and home.
I want to get to a call from Tess from Westerville, but before we do it, I wanted to remind folks that they're listening to All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. My guest, Janet Jackson, she's president and CEO of the United Way of Central Ohio. She's only going to be with us for a few more minutes. A lot of folks were frustrated that they can't, to the extent that they used to be able to, pick where their donations to United mm-hmm. Way go. because you've taken on these larger roles for United Way. How have you answered that criticism in the last 5 or 6 years?
Well, I think maybe it's a little bit different. I think that folks now want more choice. So they've still been able to give to the agencies that have been a part of our work because they have. Again, the donor is my customer. And so if they say I want to give to X agency, even if it's not a part of our work, we will get that gift there. Now, what happened this year is a little bit different. We broadened, and again, it's donor-driven. It's not something we're going to advertise. But before, it was gifts to Health and Human Services. So now it's been expanded. So if you want to give to the arts, you know, if you want to give to education, if you want to give into areas of the environment, certainly our younger donors want more choice. I mean, it's a changing landscape, you know, of the donor. Fewer individuals actually, you know, in the workplace, more individual. And so we listen to our customers. We listen to our donors who said they wanted that choice. Again, you're not going to see it on necessarily on our brochures, but if a donor says, I want my gift to go to, we will facilitate getting that gift there.
Tess in Westerville, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Yes. I just have a quick comment because I wanted to pull over so you wouldn't hear me driving, and I'll
thank
my answer off the air. When I was, a young, much younger person and a clerical worker in a big corporation that was and is still very active in United Way, my gift was anything but voluntary. Everybody wanted their department to have 100% participation, and as I was the only one, I was called into the office by my superior and said, what's your problem? You need to give. I was far from alone in this experience, and I have since that time often asked people who work at big corporations, does this happen to you? And, yeah, it happens pretty regularly. And I was barely getting by myself, and what little I would have had to give, perhaps I didn't want to give it to United Way. As a result, now that I am in a position to be very generous and do give to charities, I never give to United Way because it wasn't corporate or it wasn't a community giving. It was coerced giving. I want to hear how that squares with United Way's mission that there was and is coerced giving, and many times people like me in that time, little lowly clerical worker, are not even in a position to afford. I was practically in a position of needing services myself.
Mm-hmm.
I'll hang up and take a comment on that.
Thanks for the call, and thanks for pulling over, Tess. Gina Jackson. Want to respond?
Yes. I'm not going to deny that, unfortunately, I think with some of our corporate friends, there is this, your caller said coercive. We have tried very hard to get our message across that it be a willing gift, and that there isn't a gift that's too small. We do ask folks to participate. I mean, even in these tough times, you know, our thought is if you have a job, there are many others who don't. And actually what we found is that many times it's the donor who's at the lower end of the pay scale who is more generous in terms of percentage because they understand. And they understand that there are folks in their family or in their communities, you know, who have needed the services, you know, of United Way. It's very, very close to them. So it's a regrettable situation that your caller reference, but I'm not going to say it didn't happen. It is not something that we endorse. We absolutely want the gift to be voluntary.
There's obviously a competitive nature to a lot of these companies. They mm-hmm. want to beat the other company out and have, you know, more, and they want to contribute more and that kind of a thing. But how do you prep the companies for what they go out and do and the individuals and the corporations for what they go out to do to raise money?
Well, again, one of the things we have de-emphasized is the kind of the gold amount. There is certainly a participation, you know, rate if it's, you know, a buck a pay or whatever. But again, this is how we do it. We ask them to let us educate their employees about the work. That's the main thing. If we can talk to them about the work, it used to be that we would have large campaign meetings. You don't have those as frequently now. It's basically done through email or through some other type. But we believe that if we can share with the individual potential investor in our work what the need is in the community and what we are doing to address that need and to significantly move the needle, that that individual will make an individual choice to give.
Back to the themes that you found in those conversations about education, one of them was that the people you talked to recognize that a lack of parental involvement and the absence of a strong connections between schools and the community are holding us back. Talk about the connections between schools and community, and how do you get beyond that? Because so much of it's just basic security. It's basic funding problems. You can only keep the school open for so many hours a day.
Well, I actually would go back to I shared with you earlier there's a new initiative, Learn for Life,
right,
which is actually somewhat based on a model out of Cincinnati's Drive, which is now going nationally. And it is the role of community in the life, you know, of the child from birth to career. So we're just beginning to develop our work, but we so understand the need for more community involvement. And what's great is that education is sitting at the institutions are sitting at the table with us. So Dr. Harris is right there sharing with us how we can be involved, you know, what's, you know, the most important. You have representatives from The Ohio State University and from Columbus State. So we're going to be, you know, figuring all of this out. I mean, one of the things, I mean, I can point to a specific program where volunteers are needed and they're in the schools. Big Brothers Big Sisters started an in-school mentoring program several years ago, Project Mentor, where you, the individual, will go to the school once a week. Many times companies will do this, and so they'll have many employees going. And you're touching the life of one child. So that's absolutely a way of community being engaged, you know, with the schools. Most of us have the belief that it only takes one or two caring, consistent adults in a child's life to help them navigate all of the challenges and obstacles that they will have to get them through high school and, again, onto a successful life.
Another theme that emerged was folks want to see less emphasis on testing and more on learning that develops artistic and creative abilities. And are we heading in the opposite direction of that at 150 miles an hour or what?
It still seems that, and this you mentioned government earlier, so certainly there's still been this theme of testing, you know, the whole, you know, proficiency tests, et cetera. We can only hope that with our findings, as we share them with school districts, as we share them with opinion makers, as we share them with legislators, that they listen to what, you know, the community is saying and therefore make some appropriate changes. As Dr. Harris, though, I think said when we presented recently, testing is still important. So, but how do you balance the need for the tests and the cultivation of this child's life beyond that? And again, though, that might be where the community can come into play. Do we have enough extracurricular activities outside of the school day that would foster and enhance that creative, artistic need that a child has?
Janet Jackson, I want to thank you for joining us today. We appreciate it.
It was terrific being here. Thank
you. Janet Jackson, President and CEO of United Way of Central Ohio. Coming up, we'll hear from Community Shares of Mid-Ohio and also the OSU Bucks for Charity program. So stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Receive daily updates from WOSU by liking our station on Facebook or by following WOSU News on Twitter. Another way to connect with us is by subscribing to our Daily News Loop e-newsletter. Visit wosu.org/email to sign up.
This is 89.7 NPR News, and in 20 minutes at 11 o'clock, Hour 2 of All Sides begins with a discussion of nutrition in a down economy. Stay with us for Hour 2 of All Sides with Ann Fisher. And be sure to watch Columbus on the Record Friday night at 8:30 on WOSU-TV. This week, News and Public Affairs Director Mike Thompson and his panel will provide a preview of the November 8th election. Tune in for Columbus on the Record tomorrow night at 8:30 on WOSU-TV.
Support for 89.7 comes from Cooper & Elliott, a law firm dedicated to protecting the vulnerable, preserving the rights of citizens, and creating safer communities through the civil justice system. Online at CooperElliott.com.
And this is 89.7 NPR News. Sunny skies today and a high near 60 degrees. There's a chance of rain and a few clouds tonight, a low of 43. Sunshine for Friday, a high of 54, and sunny on Saturday, a high of 58. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues. This is 89.7 NPR News. Thanks for joining us today.
Today on All Sides, we're talking about consolidated charitable giving in Central Ohio. These are the charities we contribute to through workplace giving campaigns. There's a big push on it's that time of year. Melissa Majors is the Executive Director of Community Shares of Mid-Ohio. It's a federation of 65 nonprofit organizations. She's a board member, secretary, and co-founder of Community Shares USA. Welcome to the show, Melissa.
Thank you so much.
Also joining us is Michelle Bondurant. She is campaign manager for the Ohio State University's Bucks for Charity Drive. She manages the two major community charitable drives for the university, Bucks for Charity and Operation Feed. Welcome to the show, Michelle.
Welcome. Thank you.
Any questions or comments for our guests? Get the calls or the emails in early. You can call 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Melissa, let's start with you. You know, I just had, obviously, I had Janet Jackson on, the president and CEO of the United Way, in the previous two segments. It's the biggest. It's the big guy. It's the big one. It's the elephant in the room always. Why was Community Shares founded? How could it possibly be needed when United Way is collecting so much money every year?
Well, as we all know, I'd say about 20, 25 years ago, a lot of services and programs that were handled by the government no longer were part of government. A lot of this was divested. It was passed on to charitable organizations. And at the same time, there was just a proliferation of nonprofits throughout the country, in Ohio, in Central Ohio. So a real increase in the number of nonprofit organizations. Now, a lot of these nonprofits are addressing policy issues. They're addressing advocacy. They're working statewide on collaboration on issues like domestic violence, homelessness, and housing, hunger. And a lot of time is spent by nonprofits fundraising. And it really detracts from their ability to be very effective and efficient in program delivery. So Community Shares offers just another vehicle for nonprofits to do fundraising, and workplace fundraising is one of the easiest and most efficient ways for nonprofits to raise money. And we think there's an added advantage. It's very convenient for donors. And at least the philosophy of Community Shares is donors can support the issues and causes they care about most. And so that was a lot of the impetus behind the original formation of Community Shares.
How do you compete with United Way? Are you ever in the same workplace at the same time in terms of fundraising?
We often are. Okay. And we like to think that it's complementary. We do recognize and respect the focused approach to some of these really, really tough problems.
And that United Way is taking.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, there are so many nonprofits that are delivering services that donors want, that donors need. And so while United Way has a certain focus, and I think it's segued a little bit from a focus on direct services, a lot of the approach of especially Community Shares organizations has been on, again, the policy, addressing the root causes, and responding to the needs and wishes of donors. I'd also like to mention we're kind of a niche, if you will. There are other umbrella organizations like us in Central Ohio, and particularly in the Bucks for Charity campaign, right, that also address issues donors care about, like EarthShare, with a wide range of environmental organizations, right, and community health charities, which, again, it says it right in the name, all the health organizations, and some that maybe aren't as well known, Tourette's Syndrome, Crohn's and Colitis Foundation, but certainly issues like childhood diabetes, cancer, heart disease, breathing, all those health problems that folks face.
Michelle Bondurant,
yes.
why a separate fund drive at Ohio State? Why not just work through United Way?
Now, when we turned into a federated drive, that predated me arriving at the university, mm-hmm. but in 1997, and I actually worked at United Way during this time, all these conversations were happening along the public sectors about, you know, is it fair to have sole access? You know, how, you know, are there other agencies that appeal to the donor bases? Obviously, the university is comprised of a myriad of different people from different communities. A lot of our people don't just live in Central Ohio. They live in counties surrounding, and it just fit nicely. I think that the university would be remiss into not being an all-inclusive. We even have to do better into adding, you know, international federations, which we don't have currently. But I think that it fits the personality of the university to have a drive that is all-inclusive of all kinds of charities that appeal to our donors, our faculty and staff.
One of your beneficiaries is United Way of Central
yes.
Ohio. To what extent do you help fund that organization then?
Well, obviously, we raised about $1.28 million, or at least we did last year, and the campaign is in progress right now.
They
and
all
the United
are.
Way, absolutely. And United Way still is the primary source of funds from our donors. They still receive almost 45% of the donations received on campus. I think people still identify with United Way of Central Ohio, but we've included other United Ways in other counties and these other federations that, like Community Shares and EarthShare and UNCF, those agencies also appeal to our donors, and they have increasingly received more donations over the years.
Are you seeing any weariness on the part of donors, Melissa?
Well,
given the economy,
I think a lot of our donors support issues and causes that are dear to their hearts. And so there is certainly a passion and a commitment that drives the donors. I do think a lot of our donors are themselves impacted by the economy because we do have a lot of public sector campaigns, whether it's state employees, folks at OSU, folks with the city and the county. But I think also there is a recognition. We really have not seen a decline in giving. Folks do recognize that these are tough times, and it takes all of us to support nonprofits and succeed together.
Community Shares has done quite an impressive job of building on its successes, going from practically a couple bucks to how much now this year?
About $700,000 that we've raised for Central Ohio Charities.
When was the big uptick for you?
Really, I would say a lot of it was when we became part of the OSU campaign. Before OSU became a combined charitable campaign, my understanding is they were raising maybe in the neighborhood of $500,000 for charities. And as Michelle just said, you know, over $1.25 million now for local charities. And I think that shows the response and interest of donors in supporting a wide range of nonprofits.
In other words, the more the merrier.
Absolutely.
Michelle, tell us about where you have seen the biggest increase.
Well, in the past year, we see increases most often in Community Shares.
Okay.
Community Shares has represented the federation with the most growth wide and varied, and sometimes they take a couple of dollar hit, but and it goes to some other federation. I think they alternate depending on the year. But you know, when I first started, I think Community Shares is barely getting $100,000, and that was 6 years ago. So I really think that they've done a great job in, you know, speaking to their donor base, adding agencies that appeal to donors and causes. And, you know, as all the other federations have done, I really think that, you know, they're one of them that's grown the most since I've been here.
How do you add beneficiaries to the list?
Well, first you have to be a part of a federation. I think that one of the ways that, you know, the university has approached this campaign is it has to be manageable. And, you know, this is a one-and-a-half-person office managing our drive along with all of the...
Really?
Yes, absolutely. We recruit coordinators. No, I don't want to act like it's just me, but, you know, there's coordinators
well,
all over campus.
A half more of you.
Absolutely. There's about 65 helpers across the campus that help us fundraise within their colleges and
kind of like the United Way system.
Absolutely. Yeah. But we do it internally, and we do it all ourselves, and we get helpers across the campus, and they raise in their college and their unit. And, you know, I feel like we ask the people to apply every year if they're a part of the federations that exist. You know, we are a conservative campus still, so we are not real ready to open the gates up to let, widely different. But I am always encouraging nonprofits to contact our federations, and we have added lots of them that have started with me and just saying, hey, why don't you contact this? It looks like you fit there.
Oh, so it's very symbiotic then.
Yes.
You're finding individual agencies, individual organizations that want to be part of your giving every year, and you're saying if you want to, you have to join a federation, then you send them, you tell them about the federations.
Absolutely.
How many, you said the big increases came from when you started working with OSU. How many other agencies came to you as a result of the OSU relationship?
I'm not sure I could quite answer that, but I will say that when we first started out, we had 16 member organizations, and we currently have 65. I would say that is, again, listening to our customers as donors. I think what Michelle is referencing is, you know, individual employees at OSU may come to her and say, oh, I'm involved with this great nonprofit, and I'd really like to see them on the list at OSU, and how can that happen? One in particular I can think of is Asha Ray of Hope, which serves the East Asian community, and they address issues of domestic violence. And it was one of the doctors at the medical center that I think maybe nagged Michelle a little bit until
in a good way,
but eventually became a member of Community Shares. And again, that's a critical need in our community. Part of the whole domestic violence issue, which has such a wide-reaching and negative impact on families.
Some Community Shares beneficiaries were once part of United Way, and a few years ago when they restructured their focus, it left many worthy charities at the sidelines. How much did that affect your membership?
We actually were approached by a number of previous United Way agencies. We do have an application process. They're interviewed and vetted by our member relations committee. It is a board approval process, but certainly we were approached by former United Way agencies. And as much as we respect United Way's focus on putting their energies into specific areas, there is still a need out there. I'm thinking of Voice Corps, for example, which provides reading services for folks that are blind or visually impaired. And knowing some people that are blind and how isolating that can be, I still think that's a critical service to help keep those folks connected and informed and have access to the Dispatch or Time Magazine or even the grocery ads. So, yes, we were approached by a number of United Way agencies, and some of them have since become members of Community Shares.
Michelle, what are your obstacles? We had a caller earlier who talked to Janet Jackson and said that she felt coerced.
Mm-hmm.
How do you manage that that image of coercing people in the workplace at Ohio State?
I personally, witnessed this, you know, as a campaigner. And this was nothing that I conveyed as a campaigner. This was the company personality and their strive for competition and to be recognized. And I think that I don't know that we have a lot of that here. I think we have so many giving options around this campus that we're proud of our community participation. I personally don't endorse, and I say it out loud, that 100% participation is not necessary, that people don't just have one time a year to be approached for donations. People are hit all kinds of ways now with, you know, it used to be a season for fundraising. Now the season is 12 months out of the year. You are probably going to be approached by something to donate to. So it would be naive of us to believe that our donors only have one shot at being a donor. So I convey this personality of, you know, if you know, I want the voluntary gift, because the involuntary gift goes away. The involuntary gift is nothing you can depend upon, and depending on the winds of change, your involuntary gift is the one that disappears the fastest. So that's the personality that I train our coordinators with, and I'm hoping that's what gets conveyed down at the college and unit level.
Michelle Bondurant, thanks for joining us today and explaining all that. We appreciate it. Michelle Bondurant, she's campaign manager for the Ohio State University Bucks for Charity. Also, Melissa Majors. Melissa, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
Melissa Majors, she's executive director, Community Shares of Mid-Ohio, also a board member, secretary, and co-founder of Community Shares USA. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher, and I want to remind you that you can receive daily updates from our show by liking All Sides with Ann Fisher on Facebook or by following me, Ann, on Twitter at AnnFisherWOSU. Be sure to visit WOSU.org/allsides to explore the audio and video archive of every show. You can also download podcasts from all the guests and topics. Visit WOSU.org/allsides to do that. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. On the next Fresh Air, the Great Tech War of 2012. We talk with Farhad Manju about how Apple, Google, Amazon, and Facebook are on the verge of war against each other. Manju's article about this is in Fast Company. He's a technology columnist for Slate. Join us.
And Fresh Air begins later today at noon on 89.7 NPR News. And Friday night on WOSU-TV, watch PBS Arts' Give Me the Banjo, narrated by Steve Martin, a banjoist himself. The show explores the roots of American music and features some great performances. Watch Friday night at 9 on WOSU-TV.
Support for 89.7 comes from the Midland Theater, presenting Neo Stance Theater's Count, The Legend of Dracula, combining rock, pop, and industrial music with video imaging Friday, November 4th. Tickets at MidlandTheater.org.
53 degrees in downtown Columbus, partly sunny skies today, warming up to a high of 60 degrees. There's a chance of rain tonight and cloudy skies, a low of 43. Some sunshine for Friday and a high of 54, and sunshine on Saturday, a high of 58. This is WOSU 89.7, WOSU HD1, and WOSU 820 Columbus, and streaming online at WOSU.org. 89.7 NPR News, a service of WOSU Public Media. It's 11 o'clock.
Nearly 15% of Americans rely on food stamps, and then there's a local food pantry, a growing fixture in most communities, including suburbia. But how do you turn the struggle to put food on the table into a nutritious meal? Coming up, we'll talk about how to enjoy good nutrition in a down economy. We'll hear from a nationally noted nutritionist, along with the chief dietitian for the Mid-Ohio Food Bank. Join us after the news on All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News and streaming at WOSU.org/allsides.